Interview.
This is an interview.
What do you mean?
Are you gonna like? I guess you are interviewing. It's not really an interview. You're just hosting.
What's the difference?
Just. I mean, I guess whatever. Whatever. Let's just fucking start. No, I think an interview. Well, I don't know. You're hosting your podcast. It's your podcast. You're the host. So I guess you are conducting an interview. But
am
like,
I the host?
Are you going to? But like an interview, it would be like. I mean, it's not just what I think about the movie, and then we're going to have a conversation about the movie. Or you... Okay, sorry, I'll let you lead the way. Okay.
I think we're working out some control issues here.
No, I'm sorry.
No.
I'm going to shut up now. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Did you get me talking about the interview then? Oh, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're in.
We're editing. Oh, my God. I sound like such an asshole.
We're balls deep.
We're balls deep. All right, well, you're going to... Well, cut, edit. Sorry, control issues. I'm Emmy. I'm one of my many talents is I'm a friend of Will's. That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Introduce myself, like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I'm a host and DJ on Beats One Radio. I host the playlist hours there at live from New York. I'm a events DJ. I host not a podcast.
Yeah.
It's the pre-podcast, the web series. that early form of content, you know, the web series. So archaic these days in the world of podcasts. It's called Slumber Party at Emmy's House, where I have bands onto my slumber party. So I feel very comfortable. I interview them in my bed, so I feel very comfortable doing this in your bedroom.
Now you've just given the game away. Everyone thought I had a giant budget and we were in a studio in Manhattan. Oops.
We are.
Who'd want that anyway?
You live in a huge studio in Manhattan.
So you know, you know Nicholas is doing a Q&A tonight at the Angelica Center, another one. And part of me really regrets that we didn't stay.
Me too.
So we're going to talk about the Neon Demon, which is his new feature. I don't even know how you would sum up this film. I think that on the campaign summary is, when aspiring model Jessie moves to LA, her youth and vitality are devoured by a group of beauty-obsessed women who will take any means necessary to get what she has. Which probably is a very good summary.
It is quite a good summary, but I wouldn't really, like, I don't necessarily think that she was as innocent as they're really making her out to be.
God, no.
God, no.
Elle Fanning is a mature woman.
Elle Fanning's a bad bitch.
The role represented that.
Yeah, definitely.
This is the first time we've seen Elle Fanning. Well, this is supposedly the first time we've seen Elle Fanning as an adult.
Yeah.
But she's a very adult actor.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Somewhere?
I haven't.
This is Sofia Coppola. She's...
But a huge Stephen Dorff fan, you know.
And you haven't seen it?
No, I haven't.
Jesus Christ.
I know.
It's great. She's like the adult in that father-daughter relationship.
Got it.
So seeing her as kind of the boss bitch.
Yeah.
Isn't new for me.
Yeah. It's just a different form of boss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like she's not like a little ice skating 12-year-old anymore.
No. No, that's
kind of what she's doing in Somewhere.
Great. Maybe she'll get back to that, you know?
I hope so.
Next role.
I think she's the standout in this film, and it probably couldn't happen without her.
Oh, no.
Because it's a film about a celebrity child model thing.
Yeah.
And she is a celebrity child model thing.
Yeah.
She's a young woman now. My problem with this film, or many people's problem with Nicholas Winding Refn's films, are style over substance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if you're going to go all the way with, like, girl-on-girl cannibalism, let's see full frontal nudity.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see all of it.
Yeah.
We have necrophilia, and then we have very conservative shots of Elle Fanning, like, removing her clothes in a photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the agent was, like, very much on the phone.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Elle can't be naked, she can't do this. Does it detract from the film? Probably not hugely, but these kind of things stop the film from being a little bit more substantial for me.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed he didn't pull any punches. I mean, like, he didn't pull any punches except for, you know... The preciousness of Elle Fanning,
mm-hmm,
in certain ways. And, I mean, I personally draw the line at necrophilia, so that's where the film kind of lost me, but no, it actually lost me a little bit before then. Actually, it didn't lose me at all. I think I just was... was just not expecting that. You know, it was a lot to stomach.
Well, I felt the film was like treading on really clever ground by being this hyper real parody of mm-hmm. the fashion world, and then very quickly went into like complete absurdity, mm-hmm. which, you know, like a, you know, the Elle Fanning's character opens, Jessie opens her bedroom door and there's a giant jaguar, or was it?
It was a mountain lion.
Mountain lion.
And Keanu Reeves was not pleased. Keanu was not pleased with the mountain lion. He was, frankly, upset.
But that was another bizarre character, just like Jessie's boyfriend. I'm not sure who that actor was, but
oh,
he's great.
Dean, we liked Dean. Him. We miss him. I miss him, actually.
R.I.P.
Dean. He was cute.
Played by Carl Glusman, and he's...
Carl.
Yeah, like, those were two really interesting and gripping male leads that never really went anywhere.
Yeah.
Which was fine for me.
Yeah. It wasn't really about the guys. You know, there was no... It really wasn't about men at all.
You don't think with the male photographer, kind of...
Oh, you mean the saucy uncle from Gossip Girl? I'm so happy just to have him back. He was one of my favorite C storylines from Gossip Girl as Chuck Bass's corrupt uncle. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that there was that obvious parallel mm-hmm. of a Terry Richardson type.
I think the film's argument is... when you think about, like, men and women like that, is kind of the terrifying, predatory male gaze.
Yeah.
Like, 10 points for going to university with that one. Chuck in the word gaze, you get a great
I think you're underselling yourself. Definitely 20 points.
The ferocity of the male gaze is nothing compared to how women judge other women.
Absolutely. I think that's actually probably the nail on the head with that. That's completely it. It's like one of those things of like, women don't dress for men, they dress for other women, which really, I mean, women should be dressing for themselves, you know, and that attitude of like, oh, like, it's so funny because like, women aren't dressing up for, you know, don't dress up for men, they dress up for women, other women. And it's in that same kind of line of thought. And yeah, I mean, it was fucking fierce out there. It was really, it was intense.
So... the film is written by playwright Polly Stenham, who's Harold... Hang on, I'll say that again. So the film is written by playwright Polly Stenham, who comes from the UK, which is now no longer part of the European Union. And I think there's another writing credit. I think she's an American playwright who came on later to kind of finish the script. But it feels very Polly Stenham to me, if you've read any of her works. Which means, like, quite stilted, really awkward at times, very allegorical and metaphor-heavy in a really obvious way that then becomes quite entertaining, actually. Almost farcical, but dark and sinister. And I think she killed it.
Yeah. Definitely when it comes to dialogue, it was definitely less is more.
Oh,
right?
There was nothing.
I mean,
that script must have been like 30 pages.
Yeah.
Dialogue-wise.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. But also some really epic scenes, dialogue-wise, I thought, especially from Gigi. Was it Gigi, the my favorite, the one, not the Australian one, but the other one.
The one who had all the plastic surgery.
I adored her.
Question, was that a shot? Was that aimed at...
At who?
Maybe another model with a similar name. A real life model.
As in Hadid.
You said it, but...
You said it, I didn't. He's like, Emmy's going there. Emmy, she goes there.
That had me, like, I put my whole fist in my hand for that.
Yeah.
That was a shot.
Yeah.
You know, this, for anyone who hasn't seen it, one of the models is made to stand up in a restaurant, A kind of younger male is told by another male designer to critique the girl's figure, and he says, she's fine. And she looks devastated.
Yeah.
And then this male designer goes on a rant about how beauty can't be manufactured, basically, you know, aiming his fire at this model, Gigi, who's had all this plastic surgery. I'm not sure how much plastic surgery Gigi Hadid has had, but...
I think that...
Like, worthwhile investment at this stage.
Absolutely. It's, you know, that's the moneymaker right there. gotta put that investment in. But I really liked... I mean, she was the way that... I don't know the actress, but she was so... I mean, she was this brilliant Stepford wife of a human.
Bella Heathcott.
What's her name?
Bella Heathcott.
I mean, I loved her. I thought she was great, and I think some of the best dialogue moments and writing I think came out of the models' interaction, like in the bathroom. And I love the diner scene when they go to the diner, and it's such a fantastic, you know. Gigi, the model, sitting there saying, "What are the specials?" And the sassy Australian,
played by Abby Lee, that one.
Abby Lee says, "Dude, what? Well, like, you're not gonna eat it?" And she's like, "Yeah, but she took so long to memorize it." It's so, I love that line.
Like, that's genius.
It's genius.
That's like you can just see Polly Stenham sat around a table with like. Well, I want to say A-list, but probably B-listers, and making silly comments like that. Like, that felt very studied in a way that I really enjoyed. It felt really English to me, which is probably a claim that I can't really make. Well, because I knew it was written by an English person, but it felt, like an English person kind of parodying America at some point. Which works to varying effect.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like that this character, Sarah, is Australian. Because you don't see, I can't remember seeing a film with like a sinister Australian character.
Yeah.
Australians are always like the, I mean, what's the Australian representative in film now? It's like Rebel Wilson.
Oh, right. Yeah. She's Australian. Yeah. I can't really.
Yeah. Like, I want to see more badass Australian bitches. Like, this is great for me.
No, it's great. It's super fun because they're usually just real happy, go lucky. Right? I don't know. What's
I know how many Australian friends you have.
I don't. I Frankly, I don't.
You have to go work on that.
I gotta get some more.
There's a lot of Australians in New York.
I know. Well, it's actually, I made this joke. Well, was it to you that I made this joke? That LA for Brits in the film industry is New York for Australians in the music industry.
What's New York got that Sydney and Melbourne doesn't have? I mean, I know, I'm sure there's a lot, but...
Some true grit.
Yeah, probably a good enough answer.
Yeah.
But why do they come here? What do they do?
I don't know. Music industry. Like, I feel like I know there's all the... They're in bands. They do music stuff. Just music peeps.
I used to work at a trend forecasting company, and the Neon Demon was not far off from some days in that office. Are you looking forward to the Neon Gremlin, which apparently is about the music industry?
Oh my god, that'd be great. That'd be great. Yeah, I'll kill any of these young bitches coming up. I'm kidding.
It's interesting that he hired female writers to write this story.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that.
How does it make you... Well, let's talk through it.
Let's
unpack this emotionally.
Because
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, just to interject really quickly, you know, because it's like, how does he feel about, you know, it's how does he feel about women? How does he see women? You know, and it's, I think it's really, I mean, it's interesting to say the least that he had female writers.
I think he had to. Yeah. I don't think it was I think he's a great director. I don't want to give him any praise for hiring female writers. He wouldn't have got away with this film if it was just written by him.
Mm-hmm.
In 2016.
Yeah.
And that's something I find interesting.
Yeah.
That I don't think a male writer, yeah, a straight male writer, cis male, would...
A cis male.
I don't... White male.
Yeah.
I don't think he'd be allowed to write this.
No.
Like, it had to come from
a
woman or two women in the end.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah.
If you're going to pitch women against women like this, then it has to be done by a woman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I don't know whether I agree with that, but...
I mean, I think I do, because in the end, it's like, it just goes back to the, it's like, you know, I don't think a man would really, I mean, would really understand the competitive, you know, the competitive vibes that are put up to women, you know, in modeling fashion industry, that in celebrity culture, like women know it, or I guess, or like that, you know, that a woman, I guess a woman interacts with that sort of, that the relationship with that more, in a different way than a man does.
What do you mean?
Like that, you know, that only a woman could really write that, because they, you know, I think that a man, I don't think that straight white men really understand or really deeply understand or think about, you know, how women interact with each other in that way.
Yeah, like a secret society that he actually talks about.
Not that they don't care, but... Sorry.
And a lot of the time, I just kept asking myself why is he so interested in this?
Yeah.
In women against women. I guess it's refreshing. His last films were very... Well, there's always kind of women... like being violent badass bitches, but I don't know what I'm saying.
I mean, in the end, they were badass bitches, but they also quite pathetic and scary and sad.
And that's why I find the film, like, there is something really uncomfortable about this film. Like, I don't think it's film's place to, you know, to present kind, interesting characters. That's why this film is really refreshing, because they're all completely detestable.
Yeah.
Apart from Al Fanning, who kind of gets away with a lot. No. You felt. How do you feel when she gets pushed into the empty pool?
I mean, for me, I just want. I love that the action. I mean, we're spoiler alerting here, obviously, of course. Yeah. I mean, I was like, when they ganged up on her and murdered her, I was like, fuck yeah! I like, because I love that action. I love that kind of. I love that sinister darkness. I didn't care. I wasn't like, oh, L. Oh gosh, you know. I was like, hell yeah. Drag her, you know what I mean? I was like, let's do this, let's shake it up, you know? I was pumped on that, you know, so, but then all of the sort of fallout afterwards, it was interesting that, you know, we had been following this one character for the whole time, and then it's offed, and then we suddenly switch, and we're, you know, with these other women, and it's, you know, all of the sort of innocent, sweet feelings that maybe had of her, you know, alone in her hotel, or all these, like, sad things, you know what I mean? These sort of lonely moments that you have with her, of her, you know, when she is this innocent. Like, I really remember that when she's sitting in her motel room, and she's, like, signs the consent form or whatever to be, because she's, you know, not of age to be a model.
She forges the parental consent form.
The forges the parental consent form. That long, lingering shot of her alone in the motel. It's like, that was some good substantive, substantiating things. But, and we, you know, obviously all that changes. But yeah, it was just, I wasn't sad to see her go, though, in the end.
Do you, how do you think people in the US are going to respond to the film?
Because
I think in Europe, people will really love it.
I think that it's hard to say. I don't know if people are going to love it here in America. I don't know. I can't really be the judge of that.
And do you think it's just style over substance with Mr. Nicholas? Or do you get anything more from it?
I mean, talking about it now, I think I got a lot more from it than I realized I had. I think for me it was a little slow in that sense that it was like
oh, there was no pace shift at all. It was like it began how it ended.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But that's how you create something sinister that leaves you thinking about it for a few days. It's like It's funny. I think you could argue he just uses this, like, very superficial kind of setup to... maybe just to trick people and to show these really violent things, but in a way that somehow is, you know, palatable.
Yeah.
I've always thought that with him. But then it does leave you... You don't leave the cinema feeling anything particularly strong, other than just, like, in this film, just, like, exhaustion.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to see hardly anyone stayed for the Q&A afterwards. Like, everyone wanted to
left.
Get out of that
room. It was
room.
Crazy. It was crazy. Everyone darted out of there.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think, honestly, because I feel like it was sort of hard afterward. There are questions now that I would want to ask him, but just afterwards, I couldn't think of anything. I could not think of anything to say. You know, I sort of needed a minute to digest.
I think that's, looking back, at the time I felt strange about that. I think now that's like a really big achievement.
Yeah.
Today, to be able to do that. Not, like, I don't know if you took to your Twitter feed after. You did, right?
I think I just said I needed a cocktail.
Yeah, and that's what I said to him. I went up and shook his hand afterwards. He was outside, and I said to him, you know, sorry, we're not staying for the Q&A. I need a strong drink. That was it.
Yeah.
He must have been like, who's this asshole?
Yeah. He's like, who's this alcoholic bitch?
I think that's an achievement.
Yeah.
To actually, like, leave people just not really wanting to sit down and talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, for hours, or to write how great it is, or how exciting it is. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty exciting. I felt really entertained.
Yeah.
To the point when the more I talk about it, I want to go and see it again.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
I don't
leave
know if I
want
to see it again.
Questions? Why not?
I don't know if I don't know. I was thinking about that. I was like, oh, I like when I see this movie. I don't know if I would. I mean, or I don't know if I'm just like dying to. But maybe I would. I don't know. There's something like about, I don't know, Drive that made me like wanna go back and watch it again.
Well, Drive's a lot softer.
Oh, yeah.
Drive's like a soft love story
with
a shit ton of violence.
Yeah.
But it's just like a soft love story.
Yeah.
This
just like
This isn't a soft love story, you know?
Yeah.
With nice, pretty music.
Yeah.
Although there is some great music.
Yeah. You had the ending on the Sia note. It was interesting.
Ending with a Sia song. Yeah.
Maybe that was a nod to Australia.
Maybe that was a nod to Australia. I wonder what the logic behind that was. I mean, I'm always down for, you know, Sia writing a song for a film.
Did she write the song for
anything?
No?
That's a really good question that I didn't do my research.
That's fine.
But I haven't heard that song before.
Yeah. One thing, you know, not to talk about Drive as if, they should be compared because it's the same filmmaker, even though they're just completely different films. What I thought was so interesting, I mean, remember when Drive came out and then afterwards, like, everyone was wearing those Scorpion jackets because Ryan Gosling, you know, that was, like, a thing.
It was a fashion moment.
It was a fashion moment.
Yeah.
And it was like, there was, I feel like when it comes to style, I mean, I didn't see anything that was necessarily terribly iconic from this week, except for the big braids at the end, because I feel like I saw those a lot at Coachella, and that was sort of funny. That was kind of I thought that was ahead of its time in the sense of, like, it was such a mockery, you know what I mean? Because it was like, how did they know when shooting this movie that those would be so...
Yeah,
almost so trite at this point.
I mean, I guess it was a year ago, so
yeah.
The braid's been coming back, you know, for a while. But, do you think this film will, like, stand the test of time? I just felt, another question I have is, why the fashion industry? Like, yes, it's vain and vacuous and campy and overproduced and very sinister and quite problematic, but we know this.
Yeah. I mean, well, I guess the dance industry has already been touched with *Open Black Swan*.
Yeah, and there's a few references that you just can't really ignore.
Oh,
Black Swan is like probably one of the biggest.
My roommate put it to me as like, "Oh, Neon Demon, it's basically the Black Swan of the modeling industry." I was like,
mm-hmm.
"Okay, I get it."
It's pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah,
I mean, isn't there a dream where Natalie Portman's character is kind of impaled with a pole in her
vagina? I don't remember.
Vagina.
Oh, yeah. God, I don't remember. Oh,
and,
God.
And the bit where this character, Jesse, wakes up with a knife down her throat,
yep.
Which is a dream, but all too real for everyone watching it.
Yeah.
It felt very similar in that sense, and not necessarily in a bad way at all.
Yeah.
But this is more fantastical, whereas like Black Swan, I think, tried to keep you quite close to the real world. Whereas this never ever tried to really do that. I think it's going to be iconic because I think it's a really, really clever film. And the fact, but it's so slow to reveal itself because you're just completely like shock and awe, slap around the face with how it looks and what's happening.
Yeah.
And how every shot is just ridiculous, like plucked from a Dior campaign ad from a glossy magazine.
Yes.
That's how the whole film felt.
Yeah.
And that's a real achievement to pull off and then still, you know, leave us talking about stuff. But there were the recurring image of the cat and the mountain lion, like, coming in. There were a few things that just felt a bit, like, bit basic.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the mountain lion, yeah, that was... I guess maybe that felt very Cali, because I guess they had a mountain lion problem. I don't know if Pasadena is just you know, wrecked with mountain lions everywhere, but yeah, that was very much like that was a little bit big eye roll. I'm rolling my eyes right now. You can't see.
I thought LA was an interesting choice, but you know, no doubt in my mind he chose it because it's very cinematically. Easy, obvious, like, whatever. But I always feel weird about films that have the show at LA in this really sinister way. Like, I love Map to the Stars. Have you seen that film? Map to the Stars isn't far off from The Neon Demon. It's about, like, Julianne Moore playing a kind of washed-up actress who just goes completely nuts. And I always find it weird, because I think LA is, like, a really difficult place to be that pent up and angry.
Yeah, it's so spread out. In New York, you're on top of each other, so it's a lot more pent up, literally.
Yeah, I would have, if I was commissioned to make this film, wink, wink.
Yeah.
Oh, the sequel, what's it called? The Neon Gremlin.
The Neon Gremlin.
When I make The Neon Gremlin, I think I'll probably base it here.
Great, perfect.
Because that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Apparently there was some product placement in the film.
Was there?
Yeah, Jacob was talking about it. Apparently, the Leica camera that the photographer uses was a product placement.
That's some nice highbrow product placements. That's no Miley using the lip, you know, the Duane Reade lip, you know, lip balm in her music, or, you know, or whatever, whoever does that.
And then the other one was the Jaguar, the actual car that they drive up to.
Oh, I thought you meant the cat.
See? There you go.
Oh, slay. That's amazing. That's like some nice... That's nice.
I'm not sure if that counts as product placement, but Jacob was completely convinced that it was.
I mean, like, it just... It's one thing... I mean, everything is... there's so much product placement in everywhere. You know, it's... If you get something for free...
I guess it's still a product placement.
Yeah.
I wanted more product placement. I'm not going to
lie. What would be your, like, idea?
I know, they didn't drop any big names. I wanted to hear the Balmain drop. I wanted to hear more.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gigi was enough of a product placement, I think.
True. So that's the third product placement.
Gigi
Hadid. Who I actually wish was cast in that film. Although they were very clever about doing that, because they cast girls who really did look like models, but...
Yeah.
Click on their IMDb pages and they're actually actresses.
Yeah. I feel like Abby Lee, she must be a model. I feel like she looked so familiar to me.
She must. But regardless, the catering budget for that film must have been pretty small.
Seriously. I needed more Christina Hendricks.
Yeah, she's totally a model. There's a picture of her next to Alexander Wang.
Right. I like Christina Hendricks because I like to see it was...
Yeah, I liked her too.
I just love looking at her.
And she plays the makeup artist.
No, she plays the... She plays the agent. She was just...
Okay, the...
Jenna Maloney was the makeup...
Oh, we need to talk about her.
We do need to talk about her because, my God, I'm, like, so...
Jenna Maloney plays Ruby, the... Yes, the makeup artist with a taste for the dead. should we say.
Literally, A Taste for the Dead. So, I sort of liked, I liked the, whether or not they, whether or not that it was intentional or not, the nod to some other of our cinematic makeup artist for the dead, Jamie Lee Curtis from My Girl.
Yes.
Kirsten Dunst in Drop Dead Gorgeous. Those are some of, those are probably the only ones I know.
Is everyone in hair and makeup an evil psychopath?
Yeah, right.
Pretty much.
Pretty much.
I love that character because she was like, as she could have been a model herself,
yeah.
But she's like, I don't know. It was very clever that she was the makeup artist who was kind of like running the shop. She has this like studied distance from everything.
Yeah.
She's the
coordinator of the evil.
She's my winner.
She thinks she won.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I said Elle Fanning because I have the Elle Fanning lookbook from New York Magazine bookmarked on my computer. So I'm pretty obsessed with Elle Fanning at all times.
Great.
Like, I pretty much have alerts every time there's a new picture of Elle Fanning coming up. I think she's really cool. But, no, this girl, Jenna Maloney. What else has she been in?
She's been in a lot of stuff.
She's been in a lot.
So she, like, I mean, she first came into my consciousness as a child as she was in Stepmom. She was, like, sort of petulant teen preteen in Stepmom, and who gave Julia Roberts all hell, and then came around at the end. And then she's been in a bunch, so she was in, like,
The Hunger Games,
Hunger
all of them.
Games. She was in My Life is a House, starring Kevin Kline and Hayden Christensen.
Is she usually, does she usually get kind of peripheral roles, supporting stuff, or...?
I think, supporting stuff. I don't think she's like...
She strikes me as the supporting actress, which is time, you know, time for a shift. She needs her own role.
Yeah.
Because she's a star.
Yeah, she was great.
I'll cast her in the Neon Gremlin. Actually.
Yeah, totally. Cast her in the Neon Gremlin. She can do this. We'll see how far her evil can go, her evil can reach. But, yeah, it was... I don't even know what to say.
And... Finally, you just saw a film last night, didn't you? You didn't go. Independence Day.
Oh, tomorrow I'm seeing it. Tonight I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it tonight. Yikes. Pray for me.
Independence Day 2.
Independence Day 2.
How are you feeling about that?
I'm sad Will Smith won't be there. I'm excited to see Goldblum because I'm always excited to see him. He's great. But... I think it's going to be a piece of shit, and I can't wait to just zone out.
Chow down on some serious popcorn.
But yeah, Will Smith won't be in it, which is just...
How long are they making films like that nowadays? Because do you remember the phase where they were 3 hours?
I hope it's just Cheeky 90.
I think we've shifted from this... Cheeky 90, you wish from a...
I'd like
from
to
a
pray for a
$200 million movie.
Oh, God, I thought you were going to say 200 minutes.
200. It's called Independence Day Resurgence, isn't it? And here we go, runtime. 120 minutes. So we've gone down to exactly 2 hours.
They know. You can't deal with it.
Can you imagine how much...
I'm seeing it in 3D, though.
Well, that's all right. I don't know how I feel about 3D. Like, I still get a cheap thrill from it. But I have so many friends who are like, oh, it hurts my eyes, or I think it's unnecessary. My friend Matt said a really good thing, which is that you, in 3D, you don't get to choose where you look. That's very much dictated.
Yeah.
In the same way when you do that little Instagram thing where, you know what I'm on about. Tilt shift.
Is that where...
Where you put your little, like, cloud around everything else and you... It was really big back in the day.
Oh, great.
Yeah, anyway, God. You should look it up.
And now it's retro. Retro Instagram filters.
But thank you for coming to talk to me. I had a really fun time.
Oh my gosh, I had so much fun. Thank you for having me.
That's all right. You have to come back.
I will come back. Correct. After I see Independence Day. I don't even know what the hell it's called.
Resurgence. 120 minutes, $200 million of budget.
Can't wait.
Cool.
You should pay me to see it.
I'm all right. I don't know if there's that much budget, but anyway.
Good.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, babe.